Welcome back to the Path of Longevity show, and I'm your host, Dr. Robert Lufkin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Steven Sidaroff.
One of the most common questions I get asked are which blood tests I rely on most heavily for myself, and that's really a whole topic unto itself, but I'm going to cover it in future programs. But simply put, there are about 17 or so biomarkers that I check on myself on a regular basis. Now, the way I do it is from my home with a simple finger stick like this. and then I just mail it in. It costs less than $10 per marker, and I get the results right away. If you want to try this test for yourself, you can check my website, robertlufkinmd.com, under Secrets. And use the code SAVE10, S-A-V-E, the number 10, for $10 off. Try it. Let me know how it goes if you like it. And now, back to today's guest. Today, we talk about the interesting challenges of delivering longevity-based healthcare over a distance. And we're fortunate to be joined by Dr. Sajad Zazala, who is one of the leaders in the field, who's the founder of Ageless RX. Sajad, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to have you here today. Before we dive in, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be so interested in this area.
Sure, certainly. So when I started medical school, you know, I wanted to help people just like a lot of, you know, medical students do when they get going. But I discovered there was a disconnect between what we were learning in medical school and what I thought was possible, you know, to help people with their underlying issues. You know, allopathic medicine that we learn in medical school is very reactionary. You know, you wait for somebody to develop signs and symptoms and a diagnosis, and then you kind of like, you know, kind of implement the treatment, and usually it's drugs or surgery. And that really didn't resonate very well with me. So I actually almost dropped out of medical school after my first year. But then I heard an interview by Ray Kurzweil on the radio. He'd just come out with a new book called Fantastic Voyage, Live Long Enough to Live Forever, co-authored by Terry Grossman, a longevity physician in Colorado. And it was the first time I'd ever heard anybody talk about being proactive about your health and what you could do to actually live longer and healthier. I mean, of course, the book talks about how eventually we're going to be able to upload our brains, but you know, until then, you need to have a healthy brain or a healthy body in order to make it. You know, that longevity escape velocity, so to speak. So that got me really interested in the field of, you know, of integrative medicine, functional medicine, and then kind of longevity medicine is a natural extension of functional medicine. Whereas with functional medicine, you kind of look at the underlying cause of somebody's symptoms and disease. Longevity medicine is how do you prevent those symptoms and diseases, and you have to dig even deeper into somebody's you know, physiology and biochemistry.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Longevity is such an intriguing topic. Before we dive into it, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what your framework is for understanding longevity and aging. Everybody seems to come at it from a slightly different viewpoint. So why do we age? What is aging?
I mean, aging seems to be, you know, something that seems to be programmed into our DNA. You know, you look across species, and you know, some species live a long time, and others live for hours or days. So there seems to be something about our genetic code, in our, you know, our evolutionary history that controls aging. You know, there have been various different framework that have been proposed to help understand what goes wrong when we age, or as we age. You know, the hallmarks of aging, you know, there were 9 and now they're, you know, it's up to 14 and there may be more that's added. So I think, you know, from the most basic perspective, I think aging is just kind of a failure of one or more of our internal systems over time.
And what What role do you think does the mind play in aging? One thing we're focusing on in the conference is mind and thinking. Later on, we're gonna really dive into the drugs and the applications there. But before we do, how does the mind fit in, if at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's very important in a variety of different reasons. One is attitude. If you have the attitude that, I'm over the age of a certain number, 50, I feel tired, then you're going to be tired, or I feel sick, then you're going to be sick. So I think part of it is kind of like the attitude, in addition to that, if you feel like there's nothing then you can do, then you're right. There is nothing you can do if that's the way you feel. So I think the attitude has a lot to do with aging. But on more of a deeper level, what good is living longer if you don't have a sense of purpose in life, or if you don't feel like you're contributing, or if you don't feel like you belong, in a society, or if you don't have a circle of friends, things like that. So I think that's kind of where the spiritual, intellectual part comes into play when it comes to aging.
Yeah, in your work, you've have the advantage of being at the cutting edge of a lot of new therapies, and you've even been doing some clinical trials and examining their effectiveness. First of all, maybe tell us how you set that up and what the organization is kind of to make that happen, the structure for that.
Sure, sure. So let me back up and explain what Aegis is. So I helped co-found Aegis a little over 3 years ago. It started out, like I said, with my passion of functional medicine, which led to longevity medicine. And then I noticed a trend several years ago of telemedicine before the pandemic, before telemedicine became mainstream. And I had this idea that, there's a lot of things you could do via telemedicine remotely, to make functional medicine, longevity medicine widely available through telemedicine in a way that's affordable, accessible, and so everything that we've been doing at Aegis RX has that in mind, accessibility and affordability, so that we can help as many people as possible. So we started out offering, metformin, which is, one of the best research medications in the world, has a lot of promise as a longevity therapy. But our goal was to introduce more and more therapies as the field evolved, and that's kind of what led us or drove us to do clinical trials. It's a little bit different.
Oh, could I interrupt just 1 second? I just had a clarification for when you say longevity medicine. Mm-hmm. Is it like full spectrum primary care also, or is this, would people have their own primary care physician in addition to a longevity physician? How do you see that?
Yeah. So we don't take the place of somebody's primary care physician. We always encourage somebody to follow up because there's a lot of things that you just can't do remotely, like a pap smear, for example, or sending somebody for a mammogram, things of that nature. And by the way, my kids just got home, so I apologize if there's any background noise. They're a little fussy when they get home from school. So if you hear excessive background noise, just let me know, and I'll holler at them to settle down. So initially our focus was, the realization that there are these therapies like metformin that can be easily accessible. But it requires a physician with the knowledge and the background to understand how to prescribe it, when to prescribe it, things like that, beyond just, the FDA label of diabetes. Again, going back to the example of diabetes or metformin. So that was kind of our first iteration of Aegis RX, is just providing that ease of accessibility to these potential therapies. And we've expanded that. Where we hope to go next, and the research is part of that, is personalization, identifying various different biomarkers, measurements, things like that, that can help make somebody's longevity journey more personalized. So, do you mind if I pause it for a minute? I'm getting a lot of background noise here. Is that coming through on my mic? Yeah. Joys of having kids and working from home too.
really. So, we're talking about the position that the longevity practice that you have plays in sort of the whole the patient. In other words, you were saying the patient would have a primary care physician, a local one, and then the telemedicine access for longevity could be anywhere in the United States now. Or are you also doing Canada? Or
yeah, we've. Just the United States right now. We might expand at some point to other countries, but the regulations here in the US are keeping us plenty busy. and so is all the work that we're doing as well. Going back to what I was saying earlier, you know, we don't replace a primary care physician. And we don't replace, you know, somebody's healthy routine either. A lot of people ask us, you know, can I just take metformin or just rapamycin, for example, you know, is that going to be enough? And the answer is no. I mean, you know, metformin, rapamycin, you know, whatever it may be, is not going to make up for a lousy diet or a lousy lifestyle. So I view this as kind of an extra layer of protection in addition to, you know, lifestyle and other things that people should be doing.
So the longevity medicine practice then, is it obviously the goal is longevity and stuff. Is it mainly delivered through lifestyle interventions like diet, or is it through supplements and that sort of thing? Or is it through prescribed pharmaceuticals? You mentioned metformin. We can talk about some of the other ones as well. But what specifically does a longevity physician add on to a primary care physician, let's say, if someone wants to really increase their longevity?
Right. Well, I mean, most primary care physicians don't have any knowledge or don't have an understanding of longevity. Like I said, we're taught to seek out the, you know, ICD-10 code and then treat it with whatever, you know, the drug of choice is. And so the mindset for longevity just doesn't seem to be there among primary care physicians. I mean, there are many that are coming around, and you know, there are some that have a personal interest, but may not have a professional interest in it. And so that's kind of where we come in terms of helping bridge that gap between somebody's primary care physician and then access to these therapies that have good science behind them to help patients live longer and healthier.
If there is no ICD-9 code, then just for the logistics of it, then can people charge this typically on their insurance, or will they have to pay out of pocket for it? Or is it varied for the longevity service?
Yeah, currently it's a self-pay. It's patient pay service. Healthcare is a misnomer. It's misnamed. It should be sick care. I mean, they really only want to cover things when you have that ICD-10 code and when you have a treatment that they approve of. And currently, you know, longevity is not, you know, aging is not currently recognized as a disease officially, and longevity is not recognized as a therapy yet. I mean, there are efforts to change that, but I suspect insurance will always continue to be sick care. And so I think the responsibility will probably always fall on the individual, you know, to make sure that they're doing what they can on an individual level as much as they can. I mean, everybody comes to us, you know, with different levels of readiness, with different levels of commitment that they're willing to put into it. And that's fine. We respect that. But at the end of the day, like I said, it is an individual responsibility.
Well, in your position in providing this service, you really have an inside look at the clinical experience of a lot of these cutting edge longevity pharmaceuticals and supplements. What currently does Ageless RX offer, and what have you found out and discovered through your experience there?
Sure. So I guess when we first launched, you know, about a little over 3 years ago, we started with metformin. The reason being it's, you know, about as safe a drug as you could find, lots of data on it, lots of data on its benefits, in terms of, you know, preventing disease of aging, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I don't want to bore people with the details of metformin, you know, it's a lot that's been written about it. But then we started looking around and seeing, okay, what other therapies could we offer, you know, safely through telemedicine? And then we added, you know, NAD therapies. You know, we have any, you know, NAD as a as an iontophoresis patch, as an, a subcutaneous injection, as a nasal spray as well. And you know, we offer CGM monitors for those people who want to you know, get more insights into their sugar. It's not so much a therapy as it is as a tool. And then we started launching low-dose naltrexone. That's one of my favorite therapies. And I've been prescribing that for years for various different, you know, symptoms and conditions. And there's a lot more interest in the last year or two in its role and potentially in longevity. And we're going to be sponsoring a mouse trial soon to kind of investigate a little bit further. And now we're up to about, I would say, I don't know, 20 or 30 various different, probably about 20 different therapies of various different sorts on our available on through our platform.
Well, let me back up a little bit on one question that's come up with some of our discussions about NAD precursors and supplementation there. You said you use patches and IVs. Is that, or what remind me what you said about for NAD, what's your program like?
Yeah. So the NAD, that the first iteration of NAD was an iontophoresis patch. There was some research done by James Clement at MetaHumans showing that, you know, the iontophoresis patch can boost NAD levels. It's a medical device. It's a one-time wearable patch. It has positive and negative. It uses a kind of electric current to drive the charged molecule, in this case NAD, under the skin into the circulation. And so that was kind of our first offering of NAD. And then shortly thereafter, we started offering self-injection. So it comes a little vial. Patients draw it up and they kind of self-inject the
is
NAD
that IM?
To help boost their levels.
IM or IV?
No, it's not IV. It's subcutaneous.
Subcutaneous. Okay.
Yeah. Patients have the option of requesting IM needles if they want that. But, you know, most people prefer the subcutaneous.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. And then the question always becomes up, how do you track, or what are your goalposts for NAD supplementation? In other words, what have you found useful to be monitors to know when you've gotten enough and when you're in the range, and what is the range?
Sure. So one of the you know, one of the things that hasn't yet developed, we're looking into this, but hasn't yet developed is proper NAD tracking. There are a few labs out there that we're looking at, you know, but you know, NAD is very unstable when it comes to, you know, blood and serum levels and whatnot. So it's been a little bit difficult to from a clinical perspective to offer it. Hopefully in the next 6 months we'll be able to offer an NAD test. But meantime, what we're telling patients is kind of dose their NAD based on how they on their symptoms. You know, a lot of people request NAD to help boost energy, to improve their mood, sleep quality, athletic performance, and so we usually prescribe the NAD injections in a range, and then we tell patients to kind of find their dose within that range that kind of works best for them. Because everybody's a little bit different in terms of, you know, in terms of how much they need, you know, what the baseline is, things like that.
Yeah, and you also mentioned naltrexone as as a longevity drug, and we're, you know, familiar with it from its use in addiction. Perhaps you could tell our audience a little bit about first how the drug's used conventionally, mm-hmm. and then what you found out for longevity and what the mechanism is.
Sure. So LDN, low-dose naltrexone, is a bit of a darling drug of mine. I you know, it's one of my favorites because it just seems to help with such a wide variety of symptoms and conditions. So for those who are not familiar with it, so naltrexone was originally FDA approved for alcoholism. When used at the regular FDA approved dose of 50 milligrams, sometimes 100 or sometimes 25, so that's kind of the regular dose, It helps block cravings for alcohol. So when used in that patient population, it seems to curb, you know, binge drinking. And there was as the story goes, there was a physician back, I think, in the late 80s or early 90s, Dr. Bahari. He was looking for a way to help treat AIDS patients back when we didn't have any of the antivirals. So he made a discovery that AIDS patients had low endorphin levels. And so he looked around and said, well, what can I do to help boost endorphin levels? Maybe that'll help boost their immune system. And so he ran upon naltrexone, which had been, I think, recently approved then. And he tried it on patients at various different doses. And then he noticed that it did actually improve their immune function and their survival time, at least based on the limited studies that he was able to do with it. And that's kind of when this idea of low-dose naltrexone was born. And so what he found was you can get most of the benefit of the higher dose with much fewer side effects when you use the lower dose. And in fact, if you use a higher dose, you actually don't get some of the benefits that you do with the lower dose. And so that's the basis of LDN or low-dose naltrexone.
Oh, yeah. And our co-host Steve was saying that he used that in a program for opiate addiction as well, and a similar thing. So that makes sense. So now, what's the mechanism for longevity, or what are the results there? That sounds exciting.
Yeah. So it's something that we're researching in terms of the mechanism. So like I mentioned before, it's one of my favorite drugs because it works on so many different symptoms and conditions. The most prior to starting AgelessRx, I used to have a telemedicine platform just to prescribe LDN, and I was getting a lot of patients with fibromyalgia, Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, and then there's kind of newer interest in cancer and things like that. Although a lot of the data on those are anecdotal, but what LDN seems to be doing is there's two proposed mechanisms of actions. One is the endorphins I was telling you about. By temporarily blocking it at a low dose, and that's why the low dose is key, you get a rebound effect. And so you get an upregulation of the endorphin receptors, and therefore kind of a normalization of that endorphin system. And then the second, Jared Younger, I think he was at UCLA at the time, he found out that works on TLR4. I think it's an inhibitor of TLR4 or an activator. I can't remember whichever one's the anti-inflammatory one. but it works on the TLR4 receptor as a neuro anti-inflammatory, and it seems to be one of the more potent ones out there. And that was the basis of his work for fibromyalgia when he ran clinical trials on fibromyalgia back I think 10, 15 years ago.
I want go ahead.
Now, in terms of longevity. Like I said, I mean, LDN's been studied in several smaller trials. Last year, the FDA granted orphan status for complex regional pain syndrome, specifically for LDN. CRPS CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome is a very difficult to treat condition, and there's no good drugs for it. I mean, doctors try gabapentin and opioids and all sorts of things, but LDN seems to be one of the more effective therapies for it, and that's why I was given orphan drug status while it's being investigated further. But where I'm going with this is, the reason why I think it's potentially a longevity therapy because it works on two of the major hallmarks of aging, which inflammation. Although I don't know if that's almost like an indirect marker of aging, and immune system dysfunction. And so I think those two combined make it a very good candidate for a longevity therapy. Mechanism, how potent, that's all, we're hoping to work on that over the next few years. Like I said, we're sponsoring a mouse trial using naltrexone, and then combine plus or minus rapamycin for as a comparison. The gold standard right now is rapamycin. So we're hoping to launch that clinical trial in the next 6 months, and then it'll be about a six to nine month trial after that. So we'll know. Hopefully, we'll know in about a year, year and a half.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Definitely want to get to rapamycin, but before we do, this is so exciting. It's almost. I wonder if since processed junk food and metabolic dysfunction is such a driver for chronic disease and ultimately longevity, if the junk food addiction. This addiction drug might play a role in, at some level helping people change their diets, even if it's subconsciously, who knows, but it's so amazing. It's such an exciting time in longevity that all these drugs that have been used for a while are suddenly coming out. It's like, the PDE5 inhibitors, phosphodiesterase, mm-hmm. better known as like Cialis, Viagra for mm-hmm. erectile dysfunction. And now they're showing longevity effects that increasing lifespan, you know, obviously through nitric oxide effects, but it's interesting now that Cialis is now looking, at least being looked at as a longevity drug. And then, you know, SGLT2 inhibitors and, you know, even psychedelics for the BDNF effects and neuroplasticity as possible longevity things. But back to your work. So what drugs are you most excited about? You mentioned rapamycin, obviously the the elephant in the room. Maybe you could talk also your experience with that and the trial that's coming up, if you're still enrolling people and all.
Yeah. So, I'm sure your audience has heard of rapamycin by now. but you know, just a very quick, you know, it's a molecule found, that was isolated from a bacteria on Easter Island. And it was given the name rapamycin after the island. I think the native name of the island is Rapanui. Don't quote me on that.
Rapanui.
I'm not sure from yeah. Rapanui. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it properly. But it was given the name rapamycin. Actually, it was originally developed as an antifungal, or they're looking at it for an antifungal, and then they dropped it because when they were testing it. There was an immune suppressant effect on it. And so then it went from being an antifungal to an immune suppressant and then to a potential longevity therapy. And so the story of that is very, very interesting. There was a Radiolab episode called, I think, The Dirty Drug in the Ice Cream Tub. It's a very, very interesting story, if anybody wants to listen to that story. But yeah, I mean, it's an mTOR inhibitor. In fact, you know, mTOR stands for mechanistic or mammalian target of rapamycin. You know, it's such an important part of our physiology that you know the this whole mechanism was named after the drug. Usually it's the other way around. You know, a drug is found after you identify a mechanism. In this case, it seems to be the other way around. So that's one of the more promising drugs that's FDA approved. Like as if for transplant rejection, and there's also a tumor-like growth that it's also approved for, and topically it's approved for, I believe, certain types of skin conditions. But when used, again, going back to naltrexone, we use it as a different dose. It has much different properties. It actually appears to be a potentially an immune stimulator when you're using it at the lower intermittent dose rather than an immune suppressant. You know, it has so many benefits at the right dose that you don't see at the higher dose. And the promise there is still being worked out. I mean, we still don't know that much about it in humans yet.
Yeah. And do you currently offer rapamycin through AgelessRx?
We're working on it. So, you know, that was one of the first questions we got when we launched AgelessRx 3 years ago. You know, can I get rapamycin from you? And, you know, as much as we would have liked to launch it, there was just so many unknowns for rapamycin because of this issue with the dosing. You know, there's a lot of speculation in terms of what the proper dose is for longevity. And people still don't know for sure, at least not to my knowledge. Like, nobody's kind of like pinned it down and said, okay, this is the dose for aging, for longevity. There's a lot of like opinions about it, you know, educated guesses, extrapolating data, things like that. And so there's different opinions about what the proper dose, and at those doses, there are some, again, anecdotal evidence of very promising results in humans. And so that's why we kind of took it upon ourselves to do a clinical trial, randomized control, you know, gold standard trial, placebo controlled and all. To understand the drug's use for longevity better, specifically for longevity, not for cancer, not for, you know, immune suppression, but for longevity in healthy populations.
And what will the study tell you? What is it powered to show? What are you hoping to find out?
Yeah. So, so we just finished enrolling, you know, our last set of patients, and we hope to get them started on their study drug by the end of the year. And so everybody, we hope that everybody will hit their midpoint, by middle of 2023, in which case we'll start looking at the data, analyzing it. And if we're comfortable enough with the data at that point, then we might cut the study short and then start offering it more widely. But to answer your question, you know, we have to pick a clinical endpoint. You know, you can't just do a study and show how long people will live. It's just not a feasible study. So we picked the visceral fat by DEXA scan as kind of our clinical endpoint. And then we have a bunch of secondary endpoints, you know, body composition, biomarkers, various different sorts. You know, we're biobanking blood so that we can go back and pull samples and you know, as new tests, you know, biomarkers are introduced to the market. We could analyze it as well, and so biomarkers is kind of our secondary endpoint. But really, honestly, what we're hoping to get out of it is a better understanding of side effects and blood work safety data. You know, if you look at the literature on rapamycin used for the immunosuppressant dose, you know, you look at things like myelosuppression, you know, anemia and platelet suppression, white blood cell suppression, you read things about, you know, elevated cholesterol levels and whatnot. But again, I mean, almost all the literature is in humans, that's in humans, it has to do with that daily, you know, immunosuppressant dose. And so it's not clear at all how any of that, or if any of that, translates to the longevity dose in healthy humans. So that's kind of, like, in my mind, that's the most important endpoint, can we prescribe the drug safely enough to healthy people and not cause anybody, you know, to have anemia or major infections or anything like that.
Yeah, there's so much we don't know about rapamycin and about the whole field of longevity. I mean, you take the sort of the gold standards for animal longevity is this interventions testing program where we talked about they raise mice and just let them live their 3 years lifespan and test different things. And rapamycin, to my knowledge, is the best. It's been the most effective drug consistently ever tested at the ITP, but You recently take rapamycin and combine it with another drug that's less effective than rapamycin, which I think you guys offer. And when the mice get both of these drugs, they get an effect greater than either rapamycin or the drug Acarbose together. And maybe you could talk a little bit about Acarbose, the effects on it, and you guys offer that as well.
Right. So kind of jumping away from rapamycin, we could probably go on all day, but I'm sure you have other speakers and, you know, there's a lot of other information out there. But yeah, so Acarbose is something that it's a drug that we've been looking at for a long time. You know, ever since we got started, ever since that ITP trial came out that showed that Acarbose, even by itself, helped extend longevity in mice, you know, we've had, you know, requests for it. To give a little background, Acarbose blocks the breakdown of starch in the stomach, blocks the enzyme that breaks down starch, and so you end up not absorbing the sugar. So starch is basically one long chain of glucose, and you got an enzyme that called amylase that cuts it all up, because the other name for starch is amylose. So amylase cuts up amylose into small little glucose, and then you absorb it. That's why when you eat a bowl of rice, you know, it's basically a sugar load. I mean, it's probably a bigger sugar load than eating regular sugar, because it's like pure glucose in that starch there. So so by blocking the enzyme, you block the absorption, at least part of the absorption, depending on the dose. And so you don't absorb that. You don't get that sugar hit or that sugar spike. It's a great drug. I mean, in many respects, it's barely absorbed. I think 1% or 2% absorption. So it's no drug interactions. There's really no systemic side effects. It's generic. It's been around forever. It's a very inexpensive drug. There's only one small problem with it: tolerability. People who take it, you know, the reason why nobody uses it anymore. Like, I can't even remember the last time when I was in primary care, I had one patient out of like hundreds of diabetics who was on, you know, Precoce or Acarbose. And it's only because he couldn't take his insulin during work. So his endocrinologist told him, here, just take Acarbose. And the reason why nobody uses it is because it effectively makes you amylose intolerant. I'm going to coin that phrase. Like lactose, if anybody's experienced lactose intolerant, you know how miserable that is. You know, you drink milk and then you get like gas and things like that. So effectively, by taking Acarbose at the diabetic dose, 100 milligrams three times a day, you're making somebody amylose intolerant instead of lactose intolerant, because you're blocking that enzyme. Lactose intolerant people lack the lactase enzyme. So you're effectively disabling the amylase enzyme. And so that's one of the reasons why we didn't offer it, because we don't want people taking the drug on a regular basis and then, you know, messaging us and calling us and say, hey, I'm getting like terrible stomach cramps and diarrhea. So that's why we decided not to offer it kind of on a regular basis, but instead use it more strategically, to kind of like augment an otherwise healthy diet. And the way that we're recommending it is, there's no perfect longevity diet, but we're pretty sure that it does not involve, you know, a lot of sugar and starches. And so anybody who's a longevity enthusiast should be following, you know, a low to moderately low, you know, carbohydrate diet. But, you know, we're humans, we like to indulge. And so to help protect against the glucose spike, you know, during all indulgences, like having a bagel or a croissant or something like that, or you know, fried rice at your favorite Chinese restaurant, then you can help limit the damage by taking a little bit of Acarbose before the meal or with the meal, and that'll blunt the spike that you normally would get from that kind of meal. So that's a long explanation.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. It says a lot about human nature and the mind and addiction. The fact that carbohydrates, which are refined carbohydrates, which are not required in our diet at all, you don't need them, and they're associated with diabetes and will cure diabetes if you get off of it, many patients, type 2, and are associated with longevity. In other words, you live longer or you live shorter if you eat them. It's interesting that people still, you know, in the face of that, cannot control their urges and impulses. So maybe, maybe no. Well, I mean,
what's life? Yeah. What's life if you don't have a few indulgences here and there, you know?
No.
You know, I think the key is to be really good, you know, 90% of the time, in order so that you can enjoy, you know, you go to a birthday party and somebody hands you a piece of cake. If you do everything right, you know, that cake is probably not going to do much for, you know, to hinder your longevity. But you know, there is a potential price to be paid for that piece of cake, you know, with this sugar spike and crash. And for some people, it's really bothersome to them, and Acarbose can help.
That's good. My parents used to say the same thing about cigarettes. You know, a couple aren't going to kill them. Yeah. Life is short. You know? And they're probably right. You know,
right? Well, but... yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing. Sometimes you just can't have one. You know, you can stay away from sugar completely. You can stay away from alcohol completely. You can't stay away from food completely.
So it's so exciting with what you're doing with AgeSlRx. What do you see? Where do you see the company in 3 to 5 years, or indeed the whole longevity space in 3 to 5 years? What are you most excited about down the road that's coming?
Yeah. So what we're working on specifically, I mean, by the way, we're publishing a trial on Acarbose, showing kind of that blunting effect I was telling you about when you kind of use it the way that we're directing it. So that's an up and coming trial that we have that we're publishing. But yeah, in terms of AgeSlRx, I mean, our mission or our goal was to be kind of the go-to platform for longevity. So we wanted to, you know, anybody who's interested in longevity, you know, if they couldn't, I mean, there's a lot of great longevity physicians out there. Like I mentioned Dr. Grossman earlier, you know, there are many of them out there around the country. But not everybody can access them. Not everybody can afford them. And we're not looking to replace those longevity physicians. I want to make that clear. I mean, we're not looking to like take the place of these longevity clinics, that do really good job and, you know, are really on the cutting edge. I mean, we try to be on the cutting edge, but in a clinic, you can really be on the cutting edge. we learn from them, and we kind of take what they've implemented and try to bring it to a much wider audience, so we can have a much wider impact. So we want to continue to do that. You know, rapamycin is one of the things that we're working on. You know, hormones in general, you know, female male hormones are very important to longevity. So we're working on protocols to help optimize those for people. You know, things like peptides, for example, have a lot of promise. In you know, there are dozens of peptides, although the FDA has some issues with them. You know, if we can resolve some of those issues or find ways around them, then we can start looking at those on you know, like we're doing with rapamycin. But ultimately, it's not come buy X, Y, or Z from AgeosRx. It's you know, take an assessment. The ultimate goal is take an assessment of some sort. Figure out your weak points in your longevity, and then how do you patch those up, and then how do you improve your longevity so that you're much less susceptible to disease, you're much less susceptible to the ailments of aging, to all the symptoms that go along with aging, and allow people to be a lot more proactive about their aging rather than reactive. That's where I'm excited about the future of AgeosRx and the future of longevity in general.
Do you see stem cells or exosomes in the future for you guys or in general? Is that something you're bullish on?
Potentially. I mean, I think they're one of the more promising therapies. It all depends on delivery. There are some companies that are supposed to have like a self-injectable exosomes. I don't know too much about that yet. Exosomes have been on our radar for a while, and I think they have a lot of potential. It's just about, you know, the cost and the delivery mechanism. If we can find a way, you know, first of all, to make sure it's safe and at least, you know, scientifically has basis for longevity. And then the next step is, can we prescribe it, you know, through telemedicine and self-administration safely? The sky's the limit. I mean, we've talked about, you know, a few therapies, but what I'm really excited about is all the other therapies that we've yet to uncover, or that are just kind of like lurking in the shadows that, like, for example, like LDN, where, you know, nobody's really been talking about LDN for longevity. And so our hope is to be able to maybe uncover those, whether it's pharmaceuticals, whether it's nutraceuticals, whether it's, you know, other miscellaneous therapies peptides and exosomes. I mean, there's so many things that we have in front of us. Currently today, we don't have to wait for, you know, some fancy biotech company to come save the day with some fancy new molecule. Not that I'm saying we don't need those. I mean, we will eventually need those fancy new molecules to advance longevity even further, but there's so much that can be done today. I feel, that's just not enough is being done to implement those, you know, what we do have.
I want to be respectful of your time and what's the best way that people can follow you on social media and also the website for AgeosRx? And I think you may have an offering for people that they can that'll be available on the page here with them as well. They can check.
Sure. So our website is AgeosRx, agelessrx.com. That's our you can search for us on social media. I tend not to be on social media myself personally, but I contribute it through AgeosRx's hashtags and whatnot. We'll be posting videos and things like that, and also offering, you know, webinars. For an offering, I mean, we have our longevity assessment that we have available now. It's a pretty good tool to help somebody assess their health and help determine some of their needs from a longevity perspective, and we'll be continuing to improve that, you know, based on patient data and new science. But that's available free of charge on our website. You go to our website and there'll be a box at the top in terms of, you know, inviting people to take the assessment. That's probably one of the better free tools out there to help you patients assess their longevity and try to figure out what their needs are.
Great. Well, thanks again for taking the time to spend an hour with us today. And thank you again for the great work you're doing in the longevity space.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
This is for general information and educational purposes only, and it's not intended to constitute or substitute for medical advice or counseling. The practice of medicine or the provision of health care, diagnosis, or treatment, or the creation of a physician-patient or clinical relationship. The use of this information is at their own user's risk. If you find this to be on the value, please hit that like button to subscribe to support the work that we do on this channel. And we take your suggestions and advice very seriously, so please let us know what you'd like to see on this channel. Thanks for watching, and we hope to see you next time.